This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. In light of resolution season, we're airing an encore presentation of our show about weight loss today. There's no shortage of information out there on the topic, but sometimes information overload can end in more confusion than answers. We'll sort through some of the fact and fiction with a panel of doctors to talk about diet, fitness, and all the factors that contribute to weight and wellness. And since today's show is pre-taped, we can't get your comments and voicemails to our guests like usual, but we would still love to hear your questions about weight loss. Confused about whether a carb is a hero or a villain? Us too. Share your questions with us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. Joining us today are three doctors with expertise in the area of weight loss and weight management. Dr. Ashley Gilmore is a gastroenterologist at IU Health, and she joins us here in the studio today. Dr. Gilmore, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And also in the studio is Dr. Arnold Henry, family medicine physician at IU Health. Dr. Henry, glad to have you here.
It's a pleasure being here.
And joining us via Skype from Tipton, Indiana, is Dr. Addison Haynes. Dr. Haynes is also a family medicine physician. Dr. Haynes, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Dr. Haynes, losing weight consistently ranks among one of the most common New Year's resolutions. And for all the excitement and good intentions today, on January 2nd, and hooray to those who made it to day two, we know that there are a lot of people that may let their resolutions fall to the wayside by this time, say next month. Broadly speaking, can you help us understand what makes resolutions, particularly those centered around weight loss, so hard to keep?
Well, the biggest difficulties with resolutions and everything that comes along with that is the fact that we continually get in our own way. We make choices that short-term are very satisfying to us, but long-term affect how we're getting towards our goal. And we just continually do things that make it more difficult for our long-term goals because it's so hard to stick with those. And that goes for other things outside of weight loss. But
we seem to have lost Dr. Haynes. Dr. Henry. Oh, there we go. Dr. Haynes, you're back.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. Well, I'll just move on to Dr. Henry. When people set a resolution to lose weight, why is it that so many of us fall off the wagon before February? Where do we go wrong?
Well, a lot of times, even the definition of a resolution is something that you're not used to, that you're trying to get used to. So this is something that people try and start in their life, but this is not a habit. It's not something that is a routine. And so to incorporate something like that can be difficult, and particularly if you try to incorporate it on a strenuous level. And so then, therefore, the body doesn't like it. It doesn't give the body time to get used to it. And therefore, just out of regular human conditioning, we fall off. And so that's why a lot of times when starting a resolution, the proper way to do it is to incorporate it gradually, because research finds that that's when it's usually kept.
And not to mention, we've just beaten our bodies up with the holiday season. Some of us probably indulged in quite a few too many party cookies and family feasts for a few weeks or all of the weeks in December. And then just to turn around and jump into a diet, what does that do to our metabolism?
Well, I can truly attest. And so I'm actually trying to start a little resolution myself. And but yeah, that kind of kicks that body into an overload. And so the body gets used to feeding off of these nutrient extra things that it's not used to feeding off of. And so therefore, now the body's metabolism now has kicked into a different drive. And then we all of a sudden kick it into we introduce this new fad or this new diet into the body, and the body says, oh, I'm not used to this. Now I need to modify what I'm used to doing. And it's just not something the body is prepared for.
Is there a way to put on the brakes or accelerate, you know, to sort of find more of a gray area rather than just stop the eating, stop the feasting, and start dieting and exercising?
Well, I would suggest one of two ways. One is to prepare yourself for that beginning of the year resolution. So going in, obviously there's Thanksgiving, there's the Christmas holiday, and then there's New Year's. So have a plan. So go on and try and get into that, or try to condition yourself into that new diet or that new fad that a person's trying to get into. So that way, when January 1st does come, that way you can kind of really get into the reality of it, do the way that you really want to do it. Or you can go in, you know, your regular tradition during the holiday season, and then when January 1st does come here, then gradually get into it instead of just going all out that first day.
We often hear that for all the challenges, weight loss just boils down to calories in and calories out. Dr. Gilmore, is that a fair statement, or is there a lot more at play here?
There's much, much more at play. Unfortunately, it's not a simple math problem. So one thing that I do find people often do is try to cut calories so significantly in the beginning that they find it very difficult to follow that long term, but also it will suppress metabolism. Mm. So your body is in constant work and in motion, and unfortunately, calories in, calories out just won't get the desired end goal. There's also quality of calories and quality of physical activity, daily activities. All of this matters.
So your body is not the adversary. They're a teammate. You've got to work with your body.
Absolutely. I like that. Well said.
And let's break down some of those factors then. How much of a role do genetics play in weight management?
So we think that there's quite a big role genetics may play in obesity and people who have overweight and obesity. This is probably something that's also affected by epigenetics and our environment. So we have seen an increase in body weight across multiple countries and cultures that is not necessarily solely associated with intake of food. So there probably is some influence of genetics and epigenetics onto obesity and overweight.
Because some cultures historically took in a lot less sugar than, say, Europeans, and that they're so much more sensitive to it as far as weight gain and things like that.
Yes. Simply put, yeah. Different people probably are affected differently by different macronutrients or proteins, carbohydrates, fats. So you and your best friend may be able to eat the same things and have a different outcome. That's where some of those factors of genetics may be playing a role. Additionally, there are some mutations that can affect weight and obesity. Typically, these are identified in childhood, but in a very, very small percent of the population, there may be an actual genetic mutation that affects weight.
Mm. And are there biological differences between men and women when it comes to the ability to lose weight?
There are biological differences between men and women that affect many things, including testosterone, estrogen levels, hormone levels, things like that. But in general, men and women can both lose weight and lose weight well when following an appropriate plan.
Mm. And on the other hand, we know there are a lot of environmental factors involved. And food is so much more than just biochemical fuel. What kinds of emotional or social aspects should we be taking into account?
Well, I think that one of the most important aspects is access to food.
Mm.
And so we have access to different kinds of food that historically humans didn't have access to, fast food, convenience shop food, things like that. All of that plays into this. Additionally, yeah, sure, emotional factors can influence the way a person uses food. We have the fortunate ability to be able to use food. Some people have the fortunate ability to be able to use food as a means of celebration or socializing, whatever the case. But sometimes that may lead to misuse of food.
Dr. Haynes, we also know that there is an incredible amount of information out there on weight loss, and it's sometimes hard to tell what's reliable and what's not. Do you find that there is a lot of miseducation around this topic?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, everybody's looking to sell their own book or their own product or something that has worked for them, and they're willing to kind of fudge some of those truths to get everybody on board with that. But yeah, there's a lot of bad information out there.
So what do you hear from patients? What are some of the more common misconceptions out there about losing weight?
The biggest thing right now has been the hatred of carbohydrates. Almost every patient comes into me and they say how much they're cutting back on their carbs and how much they don't like carbohydrates. And I'm not sure why carbohydrates were made into such a villain in the past couple of years.
And it can also be tricky to get a handle on what a realistic weight loss expectation even is. And it's challenging when you put in the effort and you don't see the results. Dr. Henry, can you give us an idea of what realistic weight loss goals look like? Realistic weight loss goals.
Yeah, definitely. So realistically, if I was to see someone in my office, which I do, and they are asking about those type of goals, what the suggestion out there and what research also shows a healthy way of losing weight is obviously one, to set a goal and then set a realistic goal. So usually we talk about losing 1 to 2 pounds a week. So that averages about 8 pounds, maybe even 10 pounds a month. And that's a healthy goal to set. It doesn't set anything to the extreme, but also makes it more realistic. Mm. And then also we try and set the goals on how they're going to lose that weight. So diet and exercise has proven to be very effective, likely the appropriate diet, actually, and the most effective in losing weight. And so what is the exercise regimen of this person? What is the diet protocol of this person? How are they going to do? Are they going to meal prep? Are they going to constrict calories? Are they going to constrict nutrients? Or restrict nutrients? And so all those things come into play when you're looking at the different goals, because you need to, one, it has to be realistic and it has to be appropriate, or else they're going to fall off like the rest of these fads. But two, it has to be something that the patient can agree upon, because each goal should fit the person's lifestyle. My goal is not going to work for someone who works a different job, or who has different time constraints, or who works night shift all the time.
We really appreciate our team of doctors being with us here today, Dr. Gilmore, Dr. Henry, Dr. Haynes. They'll be sticking around with us for the rest of the hour. Up next, we'll turn the conversation to look at the details of diet. From keto to Whole30, we'll take a look at some of the big names in the diet world today and find out what you need to know about each one before you commit to a new regimen. As always, we'll take your questions and comments on social media or voicemail. Have a set of dietary guidelines work particularly well for you? Do you have questions about foods to reach for or foods to avoid? Let us know. I'm Matt Pelsa. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelsa. Before we get back to our conversation on weight loss, I want to mention our last show. We aired a repeat of our episode with Axton Betts Hamilton. Growing up in East Central Indiana, she and her family were victims of identity theft. They often fought with collection agencies, had utilities suddenly turned off, and dealt with other financial chaos. It wasn't until years later that she found out the shocking truth about who was behind it all. You can find that show and all our shows wherever you get podcasts. Just search for All In. Today we're airing an encore of our show on New Year's resolutions and how to tackle weight loss goals. This episode isn't live, so we can't take your voicemails. But as always, we would love your questions and comments on the topic. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. We're joined again in the studio by Dr. Ashley Gilmore and Dr. Arnold Henry. And via Skype, we have Dr. Addison Haynes. We're glad to have you all back with us. Dr. Haynes, I would imagine there's a difference in the expected timeline for progress in a goal to lose 5 pounds and a goal to lose 50 pounds, for instance. Are there principles of weight loss for the same that are the same for both of those goals, or should significant weight loss be approached entirely differently than someone just wanting to drop a few pounds?
Overall, I don't like just focusing on the weight. I look at my patients trying to make healthier choices with their food and trying to become healthier in and of themselves. So it's not just about the weight. So I try to approach it the same way as making better choices with our food and improving our overall health, rather than just focusing on the number on the scale. So jumping around that question there and not really answering it.
Well, no, I completely understand, though, because I think that that makes a lot of sense. But how do you approach that with someone who is coming to you and just saying, I got to lose 10 pounds by May?
And I think, like Dr. Henry said, shooting for this 1 to 2 pounds a week is the healthiest way to do it, because I find my patients are able to make small changes and stick with those changes. And then consequently, they'll see those results lasting long term for them and getting where they need to be. So although their goal may be 50 pounds, we have to talk about, hey, that's going to be a full year to get you where you want to be if we're going to do it healthy and do it the right way that we can sustain.
Dr. Gilmore, can you give us some context for what a healthy weight even is? We're surrounded by images that project these cultural body image ideals, but that doesn't necessarily align with what an individual's most optimal weight is from a health perspective.
That's a really good question, and it completely depends on each person. So as Dr. Haynes has already made reference to, looking at overall health is probably the most important thing. So people who have comorbid disease like high blood pressure or diabetes, we want to see improvements in those diseases as well as, in general, some weight loss. Many times we look at the body mass index, which is dependent upon weight as well as height for each particular person, but that can be a little skewed in people who have a lot of muscle mass, for example. There are some different ways to measure percent body fat, so that may be a way to help a person find a healthy weight. But in general, looking at the overall picture is probably most important.
If weight loss is something sustainably achieved in a long-term timeline, it can be daunting to think about having to follow a weight loss plan perfectly just until the end of the month, let alone beyond that. What would you tell someone feeling overwhelmed?
Oh, I think it is incredibly overwhelming to think of following something very restrictive long-term. So I tend to try to lead people towards goals that are achievable. As Dr. Henry and Dr. Haynes have already mentioned, small goals that can eventually lead to longer term goals, as well as trying to choose a diet or exercise regimen that the person really feels that will fit into their lifestyle, something that is sustainable long term.
But at the same time, there are factors that aren't in a particular individual's control, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And what might those be?
As we talked about before, genetics, epigenetics, not necessarily in a person's control. Also, we know that those with overweight have biological and biochemical factors that make their bodies want to keep weight on and make it very difficult after weight loss to necessarily maintain the lost weight. So all of that is completely out of control. Additionally, as we spoke about before, access to food, environmental factors, cultural factors, socializing, all of that may be out of a patient's control.
Dr. Haynes, you've written about some of these specific diets that we're about to talk about, but the nitty-gritty of those diets can get a little confusing sometimes. Before we jump into these diets that people are using and trying, are there broad principles of what makes up a good, healthy diet?
From a medical standpoint, absolutely. We want to make sure that patients are getting plenty of the proper nutrients and vitamins, and that they're getting a good mixture of their fats and carbohydrates and protein sources so that they're able to build and maintain good muscle in their body and trim out some of these bad fats that they're having, and that they can overall be healthy. So the diets that we talk about that are healthy from our standpoint include a good mixture of fruits and veggies and proteins and fats and everything like that. They're much less on the restrictive standpoint of you cannot have X, Y, or Z.
But of course, it's not just about what we put on our plate, but how much. What do we need to know about portion control and portion sizes?
Portion sizes are one of the most important things that I talk to my patients about, because oftentimes we know what a good food is or we know what a bad food is. You know, the deep fried candy bar at the state fair is probably never going to be considered a good food. But, you know, we oftentimes think, oh, I can have this lean meat and then I eat a pound and a half of it. That's no longer a good choice. So that portion control and figuring out what's the right size for you and your activity level is very important and can lead you down to making those right choices that can last a long time and help you make better habits.
Okay, so bearing that in mind, diets like keto, paleo, Whole30,
We see them everywhere. Social media, grocery stores, cookbooks upon cookbooks upon cookbooks. Are these the kinds of diets meant to be a forever way of eating, or are these designed to be short-term paths?
A lot of them were initially designed for very specific reasons. The ketogenic diet has been around for a long time for children with refractory epilepsy, and it works very well for that. As terms of long-term health for the rest of us, I don't think it's a great idea for most of us. And the same thing goes with some of these other diets is somebody tries it and it works very well for them, and then they try to get other people to do it. But maintaining it as a lifestyle, especially when it doesn't fit into what we do on a day-to-day basis and it doesn't fit our lifestyle, is very, very difficult. And it can be very traumatic to the body to go from one extreme to another and then back again and then try something different. And that kind of roller coaster effect can be very rough on the body.
So I, other than the childhood epilepsy management method or use rather for the keto diet, would you recommend it to anyone?
I don't often recommend the ketogenic diet. It just doesn't tend to fit with most of my patients' lifestyle. And I don't like the idea of being in a state of ketosis on a regular basis in order to lose weight, because it will make you lose weight and it does make people lose weight quickly, but it's not something that's sustainable long term. And, you know, although you can stay keto and eat a plate full of bacon, I'm not sure that's the best health outcome for our lipids, for our heart, for, you know, any of our other organ systems.
And for people who don't know what the keto diet is, can you just try to briefly explain it?
The ketogenic diet is cutting out all carbohydrates from your diet, which is really hard to do, but that includes grains and pastas and a lot of those refined foods that we should probably not be having anyways. But it cuts out anything with carbohydrates, and it forces our body to find a new source of energy. And specifically for our brain, it runs off of glucose. And if we don't have that glucose, that basic sugar, then we've got to find different ways of doing it. So our body goes into a state of ketosis, and these ketones can be transported into the brain and used for energy. But that can really wreak havoc on a lot of our other organ systems, because we're not designed to have that all the time. Mm.
Another big name diet that gets a lot of buzz is Whole30. What's the approach here?
The Whole30 is an incredibly restrictive diet to start with, where for 30 days you cut down foods that the co-founder found to be inflammatory. And that includes everything from artificial sweeteners and any sort of sugar. And the idea is to cut all of them out of your diet. And then because they're out of your diet for 30 days, you will no longer crave them. And because of that, you won't want to eat them anymore and you'll feel better and have more energy. So by cutting out all these inflammatory foods for 30 days, you're going to fix this problem, which they think is caused by inflammation.
Do you buy that at all?
I think some of the foods that we currently eat, we do have trouble fully digesting. You know, science is a wonderful thing, and it's made a lot of good progress. And altering some of our foods so that they last longer, or that we have more nutritional value in individual items that maybe weren't nutritious to begin with, I think there could be some credit to that. But the diet is so restrictive, and sticking with it without any exceptions for 30 days is very, very hard. And then long term, I haven't seen people that say, oh, I feel like $1 million and I never want to eat any of those things again. And the second they have one of those things, then they're off the wagon and they have to go back to the very beginning. It just doesn't tend to work for most of my patients.
Okay, so I've been seeing commercials for the new rebranded Weight Watchers. Now it's just WW. It's the perfect time of year to see those commercials. And that's a program that many of us are familiar with. This is a bit more involved than just eat this, not that. What are the core components of WW?
WW focuses on that calorie counting made simple. So they've given a point system that's out there, and you get so many points a day, and you can spend those points on whatever you want. And it is a very successful program because it limits the amount of food that people are having. It goes back to that portion control, and it makes that happen. So you can have as many vegetables as you want, and you're not going to get points for it. But the second you start adding in ice cream, you can only have a couple of things, you know, for the entire day. And so it's a different way of doing calorie counting, but it is a very effective way of calorie counting and makes it simple. They also have groups, which the social component of it can be very beneficial. Having a group trying to do something is always better than going it as an individual. And that's why they're so successful, is because they built in the groups, they built in this accountability, and they built in other people that are going through the same struggles.
Yeah, Dr. Gilmore, how important are those social attributes to successfully changing the decisions that we make around food?
They're absolutely important. Having support at home, having support in your friend group can help reinforce good habits and help make long-term changes overall.
Mm. We've only kind of scratched the surface talking about all the different approaches to diet out there. What kinds of questions should someone be asking themselves to figure out what's a good fit for them when it comes to everyday diet, Dr. Henry?
One question to look at is what's sustainable, particularly pertaining to a person's lifestyle. Like I indicated before, if a person's working night shift, or even if a person's, I have a few friends who are truck drivers, and so they eat a lot of fast food because they're on the road. And I was talking to one of my patients, and what he does is he brings fruit and vegetables along with him on the truck. So when he wants a snack, those snacks are more healthy snacks, or even nuts. Those snacks are healthy snacks that he can enjoy while on the road that can help keep him awake, won't load him or overload him with carbs, making him tired or anything like that, or even other things that can more induce sleep when on the road. So one question to ask is, what's sustainable considering a person's lifestyle? Mm. Another question is, what does a person enjoy? Because if you enjoy it, then you're more likely to continue it. And like me, I love baked foods, and I don't think there's a way around that. And I've not eaten candy since 1998, but I will indulge in apple pie and after this show, most likely. And so
good for you.
So what do I enjoy? And so that doesn't mean I have to cut that out, but that does mean that I have to be responsible when eating it. I'm not going to eat a whole pie, although I'm able to. I'm going to eat a portion of the pie, but at the same time, I'm still going to make healthier decisions. So that way I can enjoy that comfortably without compromising my goal. Mm. You know, so all these are different things that you want to consider when making these type of goals to make it more long lasting.
And again, all these different strategies, they can get to be overwhelming. And we talked about some of the core principles of a good diet. Dr. Henry, I want to talk about applying those. If I were to walk into a grocery store and I wanted to fill up on good staples, what should I be reaching for and what should I avoid?
Well, first, going to the grocery store, do not go to the grocery store hungry. I think that's one of the main principles.
Rule.
Yeah, that I try to incorporate even with myself. If I'm going to go hungry, then I'm going to be more likely to find things that's going to satisfy that hunger for that time instead of making smarter decisions. Next thing is make a list. Make a list of what you need to get from the grocery store, pre-plan, and that helps you to kind of stick to what you're there for, okay? Next thing is, and people with kids can probably attest this also, you can go with your kids. You may want to go without your kids, but kids are going to influence, most likely, what you get from the supermarket. They see something colorful. They see something big. They see something with a cartoon that looks really fun and happy, which tends to be unhealthy products at that. They're going to want it. They see something that they see usually on these commercials. They're going to want it, and they're going to pull for it. And so unless you have like that the will of steel and say, no, we're not going to get that, then you need to keep in mind that that might influence your choices also. So don't go hungry. Make a going and pre-plan, make a list, and then just be cognizant of those who you go with to see if they're going to help influence those healthy choices or not.
And Dr. Gilmore, carbs get a bad rap. Good carbs, bad carbs, what's the difference?
So what I try to reinforce with patients is we want to stay away from added sugars. We want to stay away from processed foods, overly refined foods. So carbs are not bad, but there are extra sugars, which are carbohydrates, that are unnecessary. Vegetables are carbohydrates. Fruits have carbohydrates and natural sugars, and those are not considered unhealthy foods. So sticking to the fresh foods and lean meats, that tends to be most healthy.
And avoid added sugars.
Avoid added sugars.
Dr. Haynes, breakfast is also that has a lot of street cred for being the most important meal of the day. Is there merit to this?
I like the idea of breakfast being the most important meal of the day, but that's because I like to get up, I like to feel my body, and I like to go for the day. And we need to stop thinking about food as something that we have to do three times a day with snacks in between and start using it as fuel for our body. And I think starting the day with fuel is important, but what you choose for that fuel can really set the tone for the day. Most of our breakfast choices, or at least that I make or that my friends and family make, are very high in those simple carbohydrates with the refined sugars and those kind of things that we should avoid. And then we end up kind of crashing later in the day.
So what makes up a good breakfast then? What's an example or two in about 30 seconds?
I like things that have a good healthy fat in it with a little bit of protein as well so that I last longer. So I like a good old protein shake with some green veggies thrown in it.
There's lots more to talk about, and we will be coming back with Drs. Ashley Gilmore, Addison Haynes, and Arnold Henry when we come back from the break to talk about where fitness comes into weight loss goals and how to sustain motivation through long-term goals like weight loss. And do you have questions about what exercises are right for you? Is a premium gym membership really necessary to reach your goals? And how can we not start good habits but keep them? Let us know on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In.
This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on weight loss. We're joined today by Drs. Ashley Gilmore, Addison Haynes, and Arnold Henry from IU Health. We're talking about diet, fitness, and motivation. And if you have a success story or a frustration that you'd like to share or a question that you'd like to ask, find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. We won't be able to use it on the show since we're pre-taped today, but we would still love to hear from you. We have a voicemail from Greg about personal fitness. Let's hear that now.
Yes, my name is Greg. I'm calling from Greenwood, Indiana. As a pediatrician, I wondered if your panel could comment on the decreased number of hours in physical education, especially in elementary schools, and decreased hours in recess, and their impact on the growing obesity epidemic in children. I know it's a multifactorial problem, but maybe we just need to let them move around a little bit more. Thanks.
Dr. Henry, any comment on that?
Oh, yes, I definitely agree. There has been a push to increase physical education and even recess, because there has been a decrease in our primary and secondary schooling. And since then, we do see that there's a rise in obesity and overweight and even in diabetes in our pediatric population. And there are some modifications that's been made or trying to be made in our education system to increase these hours. Some have been effective. I mean, this goes along with also supplying healthier diets in the schools also. And I think that also I think that they are trying to put a focus on the healthy diets in the school. But in my opinion, I feel like, just as was previously spoken, there needs also to be as equal of a focus put on the physical activity of these children also. Research shows that children need at least 250 hours a week of moderate physical activity. And a lot of this before was being done by the schools, but now that's not being the case. And I feel like that's one reason why we are seeing so much obesity or so much overweight in our pediatric population. So, yeah, those need to be focused on. There definitely is a focus on it, but I think obviously it needs to be focused on more.
Dr. Gilmore, when we compare diet to fitness, does one play a bigger role than the other in weight management?
In weight management, fitness is definitely very important. For weight loss, however, diet probably not probably, diet plays a larger role. It's very important to make sure that you have good physical fitness in a combination of both cardiovascular exercise as well as resistance training to maintain that weight loss after it's been achieved. But diet is the foundation.
So there is no exercise or exercise regimen that is sustainable for someone to eat what they want and lose weight.
Yeah, that's just that's correct.
Just
there's
not gonna happen.
No way to out-exercise a bad diet.
We talked about, even outside of weight loss, we know that exercise can come with a whole host of other health benefits. And Dr. Haynes, what is the case for exercise even outside of weight loss alone?
It helps with everything. It improves your resistance to diabetes. It improves your cardiovascular health. It improves your blood flow and circulation. Your lung health goes up. You increase muscle mass. You're able to burn more fat throughout it. The benefits are so numerous that this is probably one of the best things you could do for your health is getting in to your doctor and then starting a good exercise plan that you do 3 to 5 times a week minimum.
And so, Dr. Henry, if someone does want to get out and get active with goals to have those efforts contribute to their goal weight, so we're talking weight loss here, what are the most effective kinds of exercises to consider?
Number one above and anything else would be cardiovascular. And so there's different ways of achieving that. One is through running, through jogging. The main definition of cardiovascular exercises is an exercise that gets your heart rate up. So that can be done through resistance training, as what was previously said, or through more kinetic type training, running, jogging, even walking. You know, every place is a start. And whatever you start, like I said, with anything and everything, you're going to do in a gradual fashion. You don't want to all of a sudden splurge Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and then wake up January 1st and say, I'm going to run 3 miles. Your body's not going to like that, and it'll be hard to keep that up, and then you'll be putting yourself at other risk factors such as stress fractures, muscle strains, muscle sprains, ligaments and tears, and different things like that. So anything will be gradual, but those would be the main. That will be the main thing is the cardiovascular type exercises through running, jogging, walking, or even through resistance training. Mixing it up is even better.
So would you say that everyone should consult a doctor before they start a new fitness regimen?
I would say that everyone should have a PCP, and so a primary care provider.
Right.
And if starting a new physical training regimen, you should talk to your primary care provider first off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What factors should we consider when choosing the kind of exercise that best suits our needs? Factors like age, sex.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Age, definitely. So if you're 20 and you want to start a new exercise regimen, that particularly if you're looking at just the standard day of the day 20-year-old, that poses less of a healthcare risk than someone who's 50 and wants to start a new physical training regimen. Studies show that if you are going to go into a moderate physical training regimen after the age of 40, then you want to get stress testing, particularly if you run into the different risk factors that comes with that, such as one, age, family history, looking at what your cholesterol numbers are, different things like that. So in doing that, yes, each person approach to getting into a new regimen may be different. Okay, and so it poses different risk factors. So yeah, the 20-year-old, hey, going in, you could look something up online. Hopefully, it's reasonable. You know, you can't believe everything you read on the internet. But look something up online, and if it follows these principles of something that's not too extreme and gradual getting into it, I would imagine it would be fine for the day-to-day 20-year-old. At the same time, if you're 40 and you're wanting to get into something like that, then yes, there's more risk factors that are posed in that situation, and so I think it would be good to consult a professional.
And be aware of someone offering a quick or easy fix.
Yeah,
or something that sounds too, anything that sounds too extreme.
That sounds too extreme and too good also, yeah.
We're going to hear a listener voicemail now from Robin about her experience with exercise.
Is it possible to lose muscle before fat? Because this happened to me. I was on a 6-week program and I lost 0.01 fat and 2 pounds of muscle. And I was working out with weights for 6 weeks. So that's my question.
Dr. Gilmore?
Really good question. It probably has a lot to do with whatever diet was being used in combination with the exercise program. Unfortunately, weight loss can't occur exactly where we want it all of the time, and we don't always lose exactly what we want to lose. So, for example, if you participate in a diet and exercise program, you're not going to just lose weight around your midsection. You're probably going to lose some fat, some muscle, and it's hard to really help hone people in on a plan that will help them lose specifically just fat. But it can be done, and it's very heavily dependent upon diet.
While movement is important in the weight loss conversation, I think rest sometimes gets lost in the midst. Dr. Gilmore, what kinds of correlations do we see between sleep patterns and weight maintenance?
If you are lacking sleep and not giving your body enough time to not only recover but maintain healthy hormonal levels, then yes, that can cause weight gain. It can also cause people to feel more hungry or to eat absentmindedly as they're trying to stay awake. Unfortunately, people who work third shift or night shifts, we find that they tend to have a problem with weight gain and many times with obesity. And some of this is due to a disrupted circadian rhythm. So it's very important to make sure that you get adequate sleep at night.
Dr. Haynes, I know I'm not alone in reaching for comfort food when I'm feeling stressed. Habit aside, are there hormones at play here that I can point to for those cravings?
You know, there are a lot of things that we go to, but a lot of that has to do with those habits and the way that we think about it. And we can't just think about food as being that comfort food, and we can't just blame it on those hormones. There are changes that are happening. We are getting some of them released when we do eat, and they kind of tie in with that happiness, and we feel good about it short term, but long term, then we feel bad about it. And we've got to kind of combat those short term feelings of feeling good and find a different way to deal with the stress or the sadness or whatever emotional disruptions we're having.
And as long as we're talking about stress, for as much as weight loss can be a physical change, there's an emotional component too. There's a lot of emotional management that can go into it. Do you have any guidance for approaching the mental and emotional challenges that can come with trying to implement these big changes?
I try to ask my patients to focus on their why. Why do they want to lose weight? Why do they want to be healthier? What's their end goal? And always keep that in mind when they're going for something. So if we say, I want to be healthier because I'm worried about heart disease in my family, then we talk about making those changes that are going to improve our heart and how we can do that. And if we can get that long-term goal in our head, then that tends to help us stick with it. The other thing I like from exercise is to get a group or to find other people that are trying to do the same thing, because it's always easy to hit that snooze button in the morning and not make it to your workout on time. But if you've got somebody else that's depending on you or that's also going to be there, then that's going to help you get past that stubbornness of changing the way you do things.
Dr. Henry.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned stress even after mentioning rest, because actually they can all fall hand in hand, because the lack of rest is a form of stress. And so studies have found that people who do get adequate rest do tend to be healthier, both in their cholesterol numbers and their blood sugar numbers. Even in regards to combating dementia, in regards to a successful exercise program, because we all know that stress does influence the body. And when the body is influenced by stress, then different hormones are released, which leads to other different types of actions neurologically, hormonally, physically. And so, yes, if a person is actually trying to get on an adequate regimen, it's going to be important to make sure that they do incorporate stress as part of that protocol if they're really going to be successful, or the most successful they can be.
Just know that it's coming.
It's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dr. Haynes, what kind of recommendations do you have for people looking to make those habit changes? Where do you start when you want to change these lifestyle habits?
I start small and I make those little changes. So trying to skip that double cheeseburger with bacon at lunch and picking something that's maybe baked or less in those grease and more in the fruits and veggies, but just trying to make those small changes. And then also eliminating the temptation for yourself. So when we go to the grocery store, don't buy those pre-processed carbohydrate loaded refined sugar boxes of things that taste very good in the center of the store, and stick towards the outside. Buy the fruits and veggies and make it easier for yourself. So when you go home and you're having that moment where you think, I really want to eat that candy bar, it's not available to you, and make it harder to do the bad thing. And so when you say, well, what am I going to have a snack? I only have apples. That makes it a good choice and an easy choice.
But Dr. Gilmore, is it always as simple as just a habit change?
It's not. There are some factors that make changing your habits very difficult, and especially with weight and weight loss. So as the body loses weight, the body tries to conserve as much energy as possible, and it can increase the drive and increase the cravings for people to have those bad foods, quote unquote, bad foods. So not having them at home is one way around that. Sometimes people need extra psychological support. Sometimes there's a need for pharmacotherapy. Ultimately, the foundation to any of this is lifestyle change, diet and exercise, but occasionally and rarely extra help is needed.
And when does someone know if they need more help than that? And how long does it typically take for someone to try everything and realize that it's not working and know that something else is at play?
I think that's a time to consult with your primary care doctor. So if you and your primary care doctor believe that you have been adequately following an appropriate regimen and you're still having trouble, then it may be time to discuss referral on to someone who specializes in obesity.
And if we do get good habits formed, Dr. Henry, then we're doing something right, and it kind of becomes a matter of keeping it up, staying motivated. What tips do you have around sustaining a healthy lifestyle?
Sustaining a healthy lifestyle, that's a really good question. Hopefully things were initiated the correct way, and which would make it more easy to be for it to be sustainable. One thing is stay motivated. So in sustaining a healthy lifestyle, you're more likely to sustain if you're motivated. So make sure that the things that you're doing are things that you like to do that are enjoyable. Because if you're motivated, then you're looking forward to actually following through. Next thing is surround yourself with like company. People who are trying or who has the same goals as you, they're going to push you. If you feel like, if a person feels like they're doing something on their own, they might be successful at first, but then that they may have had that one hard day where, you know, they come home, they don't feel like doing anything, the world's against them, and then tomorrow might be something similar, and it's easy to fall out of that habit. But if you have someone to motivate you, then they're going to push, then you can, those two people can push each other, or that group can push each other. So stay motivated. Keep yourself surrounded by like-minded people. Have a break. Take a break, a healthy break. Mm-hmm. So doing something every day, all the time, without any kind of breaks is not healthy. That leads to what we call an exercise measurement overtraining syndrome. Because you're not giving your body time to recuperate. The body needs time to recuperate. So make sure that there are healthy breaks, not too long, not too short, but a healthy break. And I think with these general principles, that will make it more sustainable.
And just to wrap things up, Dr. Haynes, in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, if someone wants to lose weight and do it in a long-term healthy way, what's the best first step you'd recommend?
Finding an exercise that you enjoy doing and try adding that into your lifestyle 3 to 5 times a week and building from there.
I want to thank our doctors from IU Health joining us today. Gastroenterologist Dr. Ashley Gilmore, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Arnold Henry, family medicine physician at IU Health, thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
And Dr. Addison Haynes, family medicine physician at IU Health Tipton, thanks for making the time.
Thank you very much.
All
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you'd like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it anywhere you get your podcasts. Join us tomorrow for an encore of our one-on-one with Seymour native Tom Satterley, a 20-year veteran of the U.S. Army's Delta Force Special Operations Unit who served in some of America's most crucial high-profile missions. I'm Matt Pelzer. Thanks for listening. This is All In.